You're listening to the Stable Management Podcast, where we discuss the barn management topics that you're passionate about.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Stable Management Podcast. Our goal is to bring you a real-world look into the parts of horse farm management that you love or hate most, such as stall bedding, farm equipment, and pasture maintenance. During each bi-monthly episode, we'll be joined by an expert guest who shares their experiences with and perspectives on an important stable management topic. Do you enjoy the Stable Management Podcast? Want to learn even more about horse healthcare? Get your management and industry questions answered at Ask the Horse Live, a free audio event available exclusively from thehorse.com. Each Ask the Horse Live episode focuses on a specific equine healthcare topic chosen by our editors. We gather leading veterinarians, researchers, and industry experts to tackle your toughest questions. You can also hear on-demand episodes of Ask the Horse on thehorse.com or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm your host, Haley Kerstetter, and my guest today is Dr. Sarah Colmer from the University of Pennsylvania, and we'll be discussing EPM. Thank you so much for joining me today, Dr. Colmer.
Thanks for having me, Haley. This is a really important topic, so I'm excited to dive in.
So to start off, can you just tell us what EPM is for those who might not know and explain how it affects the horse's nervous system?
Sure. So EPM actually stands for equine protozoal myelencephalitis. And if we break that down, the equine, of course, is horse. Protozoal refers to the organism that causes the disease. So it's a single-celled protozoan. And then myelencephalitis, that's kind of a mouthful, but it basically refers to inflammation of the brain and spinal cord. And so if you break that down, then it kind of almost tells you what it's doing. It causes inflammation in different parts of the horse's nervous system. And depending on kind of which part of the nervous system it affects, it can bring on a variety of clinical signs, anything from trouble swallowing or a head tilt to incoordination to muscle atrophy, all sorts of really interesting and sometimes really severe and life-threatening abnormalities can come about from EPM.
So what are the primary organisms that are responsible for EPM, or how do horses become infected?
That is a really good question. There are two main organisms that we know cause EPM, and there's certainly some research that's still ongoing to investigate if there might be even additional pathogens that cause it. But the ones that we usually think of are Sarcocystis neurona and Neospora hugesi, and those are both protozoans, like the EPM name suggests. And they are, like I mentioned, single-celled organisms that get into the horse's body, usually from consumption of possum feces, actually. So especially where we are in Pennsylvania, we have quite a bit of possum activity in the region and certainly in a lot of different parts of the country. There are quite a few possums around, and possums deposit their feces wherever they roam about. And sometimes that might be in your horse's feed trough, or it might be in the paddock where your horse is grazing or drinking from streams. And basically, once the horse consumes the feces, the protozoan takes a long journey and sometimes ends up in the central nervous system, where it causes that inflammation that I mentioned before and then leads to the clinical signs. But the good news is that although many, many horses in the country are exposed to EPM, there are luckily just very few that will end up experiencing clinical signs associated with EPM. So there are many horses that kind of encounter the pathogen in their day-to-day lives, but don't necessarily succumb to the disease.
That's good to know. I think that's something I actually hadn't learned before, so that's really interesting. Can you walk us through some of the most common signs of EPM that horse owners should watch out for? I know it's something that I personally hear maybe some back and forth from friends at the barn, that people don't fully know what they're actually looking out for.
Yeah, that's also a great question. And probably the nature of the back and forth and all the different things you hear from friends is because we call EPM in the veterinary sector the great imitator, because it can look like so many different things and it can cause so many different signs, like I've alluded to, depending on what part of the nervous system it infects. And so some of the most common signs, we think of the three A's. That's kind of what we're taught in vet school. And those three A's are atrophy. So if you think about horses that have muscle atrophy or loss of muscling, that can be sort of a hallmark of EPM. But do keep in mind that muscle atrophy can be the result of many other conditions. So it's not always EPM, but sometimes it is. So that first A is atrophy. The second A is ataxia, or in other words, incoordination, or kind of abnormalities in the way that the horse moves. So stumbling, falling, tripping, toe dragging, those sorts of things. So far that's atrophy and ataxia. And the last A of the three A's is asymmetry. And that refers to kind of an abnormality that's only on one side versus the other. So a horse that might only have atrophy or ataxia on the left versus the right, or a horse that has an eyelid droop on one side or an ear droop on one side. So those are sort of like the classic three A's that we learn about in vet school, but horses certainly don't read the textbook, do they? And they can do all sorts of things that are outside of those classic three A's. We can sometimes see horses present with really weird, severe lameness of one limb that might actually be that one of the big nerves that supplies that leg is affected because the protozoan decided to set up shop in that location. There are other horses that present with what we call vestibular signs, which is a particularly specific flavor of incoordination where the horse is leaning and stumbling, circling, falling to one side that might be accompanied by a head tilt or rapid eye movements that can be really spooky for horse owners to see in their horses. And there are other horses, like I mentioned earlier, that might have trouble swallowing. And still in others, sometimes it affects a part of the brainstem that controls kind of wakefulness and alertness. And so some horses can be profoundly dull and really just not themselves with EPM as well. So unfortunately, there's such a variety of clinical signs, and it can look like a lot of other things, and a lot of other things can look like EPM. So it's pretty tricky.
Definitely. Well, you're leading me right into my next question for you. That's perfect. And that is, how is EPM diagnosed, and what are the challenges with confirming a diagnosis?
EPM is, as we've alluded to so far, kind of difficult to diagnose because of the way it can present in so many ways. But generally, when we are looking for EPM, we want to start with a horse that has a neurologic abnormality. So calling your vet right away if you're concerned. The vet identifies some sort of neurologic dysfunction, whether it's any of those things that I mentioned or something else. And so we start with a horse that's neurologically abnormal. And the reason why I belabor that point is because looking for EPM in a horse that's not neurologically abnormal can be a really confusing and difficult endeavor, and oftentimes a waste of money, even depending on the situation. So start with a horse that has a neurologic abnormality. The other thing that we want to do when we're investigating for EPM is try to keep an open mind and make sure we don't get pigeonholed into that EPM idea, because the disease can look like other things. So just because it's a weird lameness, you know, approach that lameness like you would any other, try to block it out, those sorts of things. Or if a horse is presenting with incoordination, don't forget that Wobbler's disease or degenerative myelencephalopathy can also look like that. So we want to rule out kind of other possibilities. And then lastly, we really want to make sure that we prove that there is actually EPM happening. And there are a couple different testing methods that are available that look at a couple different fluids. So we can look at blood, for one, which is a lot easier than looking at cerebrospinal fluid. But at the end of the day, we really ideally would have samples of cerebrospinal fluid, which is the fluid that bathes the brain and spinal cord, to compare to the blood. And what we look at in those fluids is antibody production. And antibodies are these little proteins that the body creates in response to kind of seeing and being exposed to a pathogen. And so we want to look at the levels of antibody that are produced in those fluids to convince ourselves that, in fact, this is an infection that's happening in the nervous system. And remember earlier, I talked about how so many horses in the tri-state area here, but also all over the country, have been exposed, and their body is going to make those antibody proteins in their bloodstream. But without the cerebrospinal fluid, it's impossible for us to say for sure that it's actually happening there. So the blood test is pretty limited in that it can really only tell us that the horse has been exposed, but won't really tell us if there's active infection going on. So there are reasons why horses might not be able to come into the hospital, or financial limitations might restrict the ability to pursue a spinal tap, all sorts of things. But if we had our way, ideally, we would prove EPM's presence by looking at those paired samples of cerebrospinal fluid and blood.
So once you have that accurate diagnosis, what treatment options are available, and can you explain how effective they are?
That is a good follow-up question. So once we've convinced ourselves that we're dealing with EPM and we've ruled out alternative diagnoses and we have a neurologic course in front of us, and especially if we've confirmed the presence of EPM in the nervous system by looking at a spinal tap and comparing it to blood, there are currently three FDA-approved medications that are available for the treatment of EPM and a couple other medications that are floating around out there that I know many of my colleagues have had success with. So the three FDA-approved medications aren't the only ones available, but they are the only ones that we typically use here in a university setting because they are FDA approved and generally pretty effective. They are Marquee, which is a PACE product, and that is Ponazoril. We also have Diclazoril, which is a similar class of medication that comes in a pellet form, also known as Protozil. And then we also have Sulfapyrimethamine, which is a liquid medication called Rebalance. And so those are three different formulations, right? There's a liquid, there's a pellet, and there's a paste. And we always say the best one is the one that the horse consumes. So whatever works for your horse, for your management situation, there are some cases where we might end up using multiple medications if we're convinced it's EPM and it's a really bad case. We might even combine some of those guys. But talking to your vet about the treatment options and kind of what their experience is and what they feel is best for your horse and what you feel is best for your horse is going to be the way to go. And generally, most horses that are treated will improve at least partially. However, you know, depending on the severity of clinical signs, meaning is the horse so affected that he can't stand up versus a horse that just has a little head tilt or something like that, that first horse may not have as good of a prognosis if he's more severely affected. So the efficacy of the medications is kind of influenced a little bit on how severe the clinical signs are. But generally, many horses, but not all, will improve with treatment.
Are there any long-term effects that horses might face even after successful treatment? I know I've kind of heard both sides from people, so I'm wondering what the expert opinion is on this.
Yeah, you probably, again, heard different things because different people have different experiences. And that is so just true about neurologic disease in general, that the same disease can affect different individuals so wildly differently. And so there are some horses that might not have any long-term effects at all. They might have complete recoveries from their EPM infections. However, like that horse I mentioned that can't even stand up on his own, he might get better to the point where he can, you know, now walk, but is he going to be a racehorse now? He might not be. And so there are some horses that do experience long-term effects long after successful treatment. But it's so difficult without a crystal ball for us to predict who's going to do what. And so what we typically recommend is at least 1 month of treatment, reviewing the neurologic exam at that 1 month point. So seeing how much the horse has improved, has he stopped improving, and then kind of use that to decide how long treatment goes on for. But there are certainly many horses that might plateau in their clinical signs. It's just impossible for us to know kind of who's going to do what. But I would say in my experience that when it is EPM, that most horses do improve relatively significantly, but every individual is going to be different.
Are there any rehab exercises that horse owners could be doing with their horses either during or after EPM treatment to improve their long-term health?
That is definitely a really like popular discussion topic these days, I feel, and certainly something that we try to implement here at New Bolton Center. We are really lucky because we work with a couple of wonderfully educated and knowledgeable sports medicine and rehabilitation clinicians that definitely take an interest in some of our neurologic cases, and certainly our EPM cases are no exception. And when that's available to us, we do try to incorporate core strengthening exercises and exercises that encourage what we call proprioception, or kind of like awareness of limbs in space, that kind of thing, which can help those core strengthening and proprioceptive exercises. Some horses potentially improve their response to treatment. So Generally, our treatment involves the antiprotozoal, like those medications I mentioned. We often put them on vitamin E as sort of like a supportive supplement for the neuromuscular system because vitamin E is an antioxidant. That's super important. And then we also try to incorporate physical therapy exercises, like you mentioned. And certainly not every horse is going to be able to do every exercise. You know, some horses might be so off kilter that, you know, doing things like lifting their feet up and pushing them to one side is going to totally knock them over, versus other horses might be able to do more. So we try to confer with our sports medicine clinicians and make a really tailored program, because it's definitely not a one size fits all. But to answer your question more succinctly, we certainly do try to incorporate rehabilitation and strengthening exercises in these guys for sure.
So when we're talking about prevention of EPM, is there anything that horse owners can do to reduce their horse's risk?
That is a very popular question, especially after we are dealing with a horse with a particular owner that's experienced this before, because gosh, if it's ever happened to you, you know you don't want it to happen again, or if you've seen another horse at the barn experience this. And there are some things we can do, so that's the good news. The bad news is it's not like we have a vaccine currently available or something like that. That's, you know, just like a surefire way to prevent EPM. But the good news is that there are some management strategies that can be employed. So things like really keeping your feed room clean and organized, especially if, you know, you're leaving bags of feed open. A funny kind of like brief story is that a good friend of mine sent me a picture of her feed room, and she kept her grain in trash bins, like so many of us do. But she opened the lid to one of the trash bins and it wasn't secured. And there was literally a possum sitting in the grain having a buffet. So that wasn't a very secure feed room situation, but we do want to kind of like minimize exposure to wildlife, even like small mammals and things. So trying to keep your feed room as clean as possible. And if you have horses, especially like older horses, for example, that drop a lot of feed because maybe their dentition isn't the best, we typically will recommend like sweeping up after horses that quid or drop feed when they're eating their grain, keeping grain and hay like elevated when possible. It really just comes down to like doing the best barn hygiene you can. But at the end of the day, you know, sometimes that's just not going to be enough. But those are some things that we can try to do. One of the other recommendations in the kind of like consensus statement, which was a summary of the disease put out several years ago by experts in the field, is to do your best to keep your horse as healthy as possible, which is easier said than done. But I know that you guys at Stable Management talk about all sorts of different ways to do that. And keeping your horse as healthy as possible is probably really important, because we don't know why some horses succumb to EPM and so many don't that get exposed, but it probably has something to do with immune function, and maybe these horses have a decreased immune system. And so trying to kind of like bolster that by keeping them as healthy as possible is a recommendation, but always easier said than done. So keeping your horses fit and healthy as you can, keeping your barn and paddocks and things as clean as you can, are the general recommendations for what we can do to try to prevent or lower the risk of EPM.
I definitely think that's a common theme, no matter what we're talking about. It's just general barn hygiene, organization, and making sure that your horse is just overall healthy. So I appreciate you bringing us back full circle there.
Absolutely.
Can you talk a little bit about the research and what advancements have been made in EPM research or prevention that you are excited about right now?
Yeah, actually, there are some things happening that are in the works and on the horizon. And so with regard to prevention, there are a couple different projects happening. I'm not directly related in them, but I've been kind of following them and keeping up with them, that involve using lower doses of the FDA-approved medications in kind of like little bursts almost, if you want to think about it. So a couple times a week or a couple times a month or a week a month of some of the medications that we use to treat EPM in smaller amounts that might potentially give some horses a kind of prophylactic or preventative edge. In other words, giving smaller doses of the treatment medications in an effort to prevent the horses from succumbing to EPM. And that's something that is not fully fleshed out yet. So I don't want, you know, people to hear this and be like, oh, like I could totally just protect my whole barn by putting them on lower doses of X, Y, and Z. But that is something that is being investigated pretty heavily and would be really great if we can kind of convincingly develop pharmaceutical strategies or using medications to try to prevent EPM. And so there have been some things coming out that suggest that we can try to do that with lower doses. Sometimes we might take lower doses of meds in our patients that have been diagnosed convincingly with EPM and decide, hey, if this is a horse that's had EPM before, he probably is more at risk of getting it again. And so perhaps it's worth trying to do these prophylactic kind of administration. So that's something that's been really exciting. And then a handful of years ago, researchers identified that the administration of corn oil, which is something I know a lot of people give their horses for like healthy coats and stuff, that the administration of corn oil alongside Marquee or Panaziril paste increases the concentrations that reach the central nervous system. So that's something that we've implemented in our patient population and something other people do as well. So little bits of research happening here and there that are kind of advancing treatment and prevention. And I know research is continuously ongoing, so I'm excited to see where it goes.
That sounds super exciting, and I'm excited to hear about it when it's finished. I have one more question for you. It's one that I ask all of my guests about their respective topics, and that is, what is one common misconception that you often hear about EPM?
I feel like there are a couple things I could pick, but I probably would say, and I think I touched on this a little bit when we talked about diagnostics, that a common misconception is that the blood test can be used to determine if a horse actively is infected with EPM. And I think that that can be a tricky misconception because then, you know, a person might decide to treat and kind of just move forward with assuming it's EPM based on a positive blood test. But gosh, there's so many horses in the area and beyond in the country that will have a positive blood test and have something else going on. And anyone that's treated EPM knows it's not the cheapest thing. So trying to kind of use your resources as best you can and try to, you know, get that convincing diagnostic test if it's available to you is something that I always find myself talking about. So I would say that that's the one of the common misconceptions is kind of like using the blood test to say that the horse definitely has it.
Awesome. Yeah, I've even heard that from friends or other people at the barn, which I think that's really good that you're trying to clarify that. So unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today, but it's been great talking with you today, Dr. Colmer. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Haley. And I hope that everyone takes a little something away from it.
And thank you all for listening today. Please remember to like this podcast, subscribe, leave a review, and recommend the Stable Management Podcast to a friend.